Good afternoon. This is the GNSO Thick Who Is PDP presentation of initial report. ICANN 47 from Durban, South Africa. This meeting starting at 12:30 local time. And the chair is just arriving and we'll be getting started shortly. Thank you.
Recording's on. Welcome all. This is Mikey O'Connor, the hapless chair of this working group who sat for half an hour in the wrong room. Perfectly happy, and so I apologize deeply for being late. We'll start this off.
You've got the thick part covered.
I'm totally thick. And you can tell how this working group worked. Very formal, incredibly respectful of the chair every step of the way. I think what I'm going to do is run very quickly through a really short presentation, and then I want to ask you all a question. So I'll tell you the question now. You can think about it for the big 5 minutes that I'm going to spend on this presentation. And then I'll ask it, and then we'll go from there. The question is this. Are you here because you've read the report and you really know what's in there and you have questions that you want to ask and feedback that you want to provide, or are you here to get briefed on the report and sort of dragged through it in detail? Because either way is fine, and I'm prepared to do either one, but I'd like to take a show of hands in a minute and sort of see where we're at in terms of a room. So, Marika, by the way, for those of you who don't know Marika, Marika is moonlighting right now. She only works at ICANN part-time. She's also the lead guitar player in a world-famous rock band, and she does brain surgery, but only on chiefs of state and their direct reports, and then takes time off from raising several children and running the complete operation behind that to take care of us here at ICANN. And so I deeply appreciate you being here, and off we'll go.
Doesn't Rigo, we actually have a question from Amar, who's in the chat room, a member of the working group, and he's actually asking if it's possible to just do a quick round of introduction so he actually knows who's in the room.
Oh, that's a great idea. Jonathan, you want to start off?
Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology and member of the Thick Who Is working group.
John Berard, GNSO counselor from the business constituency.
Don Blumenthal, public interest registry and a member of the working group.
Marie-Laure Lemineur, chair of NPOC and member of the working group.
Frédéric Guillemot, Mail Club, registrar and member of the working group.
Matsero, I'm a first-time visitor at ICANN, and I just so happened to land in this room, so I'm willing to learn.
Welcome, and be prepared to experience heavy jargon, but that's all right. It's fine to be here. Why don't we...
Could people speak closer to the microphones when you speak?
Yeah, and do we have a roving mic that we could run down the sides of this room? If somebody could dig that out, that would be great. My name's Mikey O'Connor. I'm with the Internet Service Provider constituency, and I'm the chair of the working group. Off you go.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff.
Oh, sorry.
My name is Jochen Trott. I'm a newcomer. I'm from the regulator in Namibia.
Rick Keller from CIRA, the .ca registry.
Alan Greenberg at Large Advisory Committee and member of the working group.
I'm Michael Rothert from the German ISP Trade Association.
Hello, I'm Volker Greimann with Key Systems. I'm a GNSO counselor for the Registrar Stakeholder Group, and I'm a member of the working group.
Lars Hoffman from ICANN staff.
Stefan Legner with InternetX, a German registrar.
Urs Eras, also InternetX, a German registrar and applicant for 7U GTLDs.
Dietmar Linden, Validaeus, consultant, new GTLD project.
Arantxa Martínez, .ts registry. Ruth Puente, Nick Chile, .cl registry.
Mary Wong, ICANN staff.
Jose Ursua, .cl registry.
Hello, I'm Katrine Markison from .no registry.
Kevin Kreiser, ICANN staff.
Christian Heutger, PSW group.
I think that's it. We've got some folks in the Adobe room. Do you want to chime in and just raise your hands and I'll call on you in the queue? That'll sort of get your queue muscles working. And, I know Amr's on there. Amr, you want to go ahead and chime in? That way we can also test and see if we can hear you okay. We're not hearing the folks on the phone.
Is Amr?
Oh, there's
Amr. I'm actually on the phone, but...
Good deal.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Heard you. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. Ricardo? Oh, yeah, we may just be listening. All right. So if anybody else is on the phone and wants to chime in, this is your chance. Okay. Off we go. Marika, if you could push on the next slide. So we're a working group. We've been at this for a while. We just published our initial report, which is the first of two reports. We'll come up with a final report in a bit, but the first report was published back in June. We've got a public comment cycle going on right now. The initial round just closed, and there's a reply period that will end in August. And here we are at the workshop at this very moment that I showed up late for. Sorry about that. Next slide, please. We're going to probably swing back to this slide at the end of my spiel. I think what I'm going to do is take a minute to sort of set this up, because I bet that many of you could use a little bit of a background briefing. Do you? Oh. Yeah, it's a little sketchy. Let me just do a little backgrounder for you. Where this working group originated was in one of the IRTP, one of the Inter-Registrar Transfer Protocol working groups. And that working group found that in order to provide a secure mechanism for gaining registrars to obtain the contact information about a registrant, having thick cahuillas available for all registries in the GTLD space would be extremely helpful. That's what triggered this conversation. And I think I'm going to take just a minute to read sort of, or at least summarize the piece of the report that describes the difference between a thick and a thin registry. And Marika, is there a way to get a link to the report in the schedule entry? I know we've got a link to these slides. How fast could we get the report linked again?
In the schedule, it's already there.
Is it? Oh, good.
Well, if you go to the schedule and you actually go to the agenda, there's a link there that takes you to the wiki page where there's a description of the session as well as a link to the report and the public comment form.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
The link has also just been added to the chat.
Perfect. Oh, Lars Hoffman, by the way, plays bass guitar in that same band, and it's my understanding that his medical specialty is more esoteric than Marika's. So, orthopedic surgeon, right? Also deals only with the big kids. So, a thin registry, and the best examples of thin registry are .com, .net, and .jobs. In fact, that's the complete set of thin registries. I'm not working off these slides, so you don't have to look at that right now. But a thin registry only stores and manages the information associated with the domain name. So that would be information like the data needed to identify a sponsoring registrar, the status of the registration, creation dates, etc., the last time the record was updated. With thin registries, the information about registrants of the domain is stored at the registrar. So in the thin registry model, data about a given domain name is stored in two places. In a thick registry, all of that data is stored in one place. It's stored at the registry. So that's just a quick summary of why we were here and what we are discussing is the distinction between thick and thin registries. Why is that important? Because ICANN specifies those requirements through the respective agreements, and actually we're repeating that same stuff that's very summarized that I just said, and covers also the advantages. So there you go. I should have read my own dang slides instead of winging it. Thank you, Marika. Marika's always about four steps ahead of me on this stuff. There's the background. God. So clueless. Okay, so you can read all those. I think one of the things I want to highlight off of that slide is that this was a working group that broke into sub-teams to tackle these topics, and many of the leaders and participants in those sub-teams are here today. And when we get into the really detailed discussion, as you can tell by my general level of haplessness, I'm going to tend to throw the ball to the people who really know what they're doing. We also went out to a community of experts that we drew from people who had gone through transitions from thin to thick before, and we asked them questions. We also went out to the other ACs and SOs and got quite a lot of input. We worked through that. That's all by way of how we got here. I'm just going to let you turn the slides and see what shows up next. Ah, and here we go. Links to the report that we've finished that we're pretty proud of, but we want to get your comments on, and then the mechanism by which you can make your comments in addition to any comments you make here. Yeah, go back to that one that lists the topics. Okay, so now I'm going to go back to that question that I asked at the beginning, which is, are you here having read the report and armed with detailed feedback for us? Or are you here because you want to get stepped through the report sort of section by section, a little bit of a briefing, which will take much more time and leave a lot less time for feedback, but may meet your needs better? So let me get a show of hands first. If you're here and you've read the report and you have detailed feedback that you just want to give us right off the bat.
Mikey, it's Alan.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you're merging two different things together. I've read the report, but I have no feedback I want to give you, so I'm not sure if I should put my hand up or not. I think you're trying to distinguish how many people need a briefing and how many don't.
Yeah, that's where
Let's separate the issues.
So how many people need a briefing? Hands up. In the back. Fair number of people need a briefing. Let me do it this way. Let's start with people who have feedback. Give them a chance to try it. And then we'll do the briefing and see where that leads us. Because there are some people who raised their hand and said, I have feedback ready to go. And let's start with that and then grind through the briefing for those who don't have that. Did you? I thought I saw your hand up.
No, I don't. I've read the report. I mean, we took part of the working group. I don't think we have any feedback.
Okay. Sounds like maybe briefing next.
It's in the report.
Yeah, that's the trick to being a participant in the working group, is hopefully the report reflects your views already. All right, let me do a briefing. And to do that, can Marike, you do two things? I'll kind of give you a little minute to do this. Can you get the report into the Adobe room so that then I can drag people through it page by page? Or is Lars, are you running the... Yeah, okay.
Do you also want anything on the screen? Or?
Well, is there a way... No, that's right. We have to sort of synchronize those. So it would be nice to have the report... Well, let's
see how it looks on the screen.
If we can get it on the screen, let's see how it looks. And we'll see how it looks in the Adobe room. I think it'll look okay in there. One option would be for people to log into the Adobe room even though you're here. Welcome, Steve. Join us at the table. Steve Metallitz from the Intellectual Property Constituency and sub-team leader just joined us. Welcome. Okay, let's... Oh, wait, I'm waiting for the Adobe. Marika, are you also seeing the Adobe room?
Yes, it's being uploaded.
Yeah, okay. So what I'm thinking is if you could keep us in sync with the Adobe room, I'll run the report in the Adobe room if you promote me. And that way we'll have two sets of eyes on this thing. What I'll do is sync. Do this with a real mouse. I think we're ready to roll. So I'm going to sort of drag us into the early part of the report first. Sort of go back to that background section. There's the table of contents. Here's the executive summary. There's the background that I was sort of summarizing, which is the difference between a thick and a thin registry, the paragraph about IRTP was our genesis. And then I'm on to the page summarizing the deliberations of the working group, which is where that list of topics, we were basically charged with covering those 8 or 9 topics as dimensions of the problem, and that's basically what you're going to get a briefing on here. And let me get to the preliminary recommendation, which is in section 1.3 of the report, and the preliminary recommendation of the working group is that ThickWiz should become a requirement for all GTLDs. So basically, you remember there was a funny advertisement, at least in the United States of America, that a famous efficiency expert came and reported to the audience whether whatever they were going to do was a good idea. And he got up and he said, yes, and then he sat down again. In a way, that's the way you can summarize this report, which is we've worked very hard on a very complicated issue, and at least in this initial report, the summary is yes, that this should happen. However, there's nuance, and I think it's the nuance that people probably want to hear about. I think the paragraph that I want to focus on is the one that says, the working group expects numerous benefits as the result of requiring THCUAs for all GTLD registries. Nevertheless, the working group recognizes that a transition from the current thin registries would affect over 120 million domain name registrations, and as such, it should be carefully prepared and implemented. In Section 7.2, we outline a number of implementation considerations, and we'll get to those. And in the next section, we also provide other observations that we want to highlight for you. So again, this is a report that needs to be read. This is not one that you can just summarize in a heartbeat, but we'll give it a try. I'm going to skip through to... I think I'm going to go directly to the chunks of work because there's quite a bit of background that goes into quite a bit of detail on the difference between thick and thin registries. So this, if you're new to ICANN and want a good background document to read, this is not too bad. It's written so that hopefully by the end you have a better, at least, understanding of the difference between the two. I think I'll skip the approach, go into the deliberations, and go to the first of our subtopics, which we describe as response consistency. And in that topic, what we're talking about is that in a thick registry, in other words, the registry where all the data is in a single place, the labeling and display of that information is easy to parse, and all registrars and clients would have to display it accordingly. I actually don't know quite what we meant by that. This is...
It's scrolling
like crazy. Yeah. Okay, so we're on page... 19. And the issue, and this is really what drove the IRTP, the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy Working Group, is that currently there are no labeling or display requirements for thin or thick registries, although this is a little bit outdated because of the new RAA. I think that has elements in it. We can point to that in the following paragraph. And we are pointing out that this set of problems may be made even worse as we get into internationalized data. In a thick environment, a registry could normalize all that. They could make it consistent, which would certainly address the issue that the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy Working Group was interested when they recommended that we do this work. But it would also help other stakeholders, not just people trying to do inter-registrar transfers, but, for example, people trying to find out information of other types about domains rapidly and in an automated way. So... this report is sort of filled with sections like this where it says, we feel that it will improve response consistency and result in better access to WHOIS data for all users of the database. But collecting and displaying that data may present some challenges when the data is being provided by registrants whose primary language uses a script that doesn't employ Latin characters and so on. And so some of the recommendations in this report, we sort of are making contingents on work by others. I think that's one of the things that's important to emphasize about this report. Now, one of the drawbacks is that by making everything the same, one of the comments we got was that we may be shutting off opportunities for innovation and creativity, because by making everything uniform, we prevent people from trying different approaches to this, to solving the problem of display. And we concluded that the benefit of the consistency outweighed the loss that this represents. So you'll see this throughout the report, that there are trade-offs that need to be, you know, we tried very hard to describe those and describe the puzzles that they represent. And so in many cases, we will come to conclusions like this, where we say that on balance, we find that this would improve response consistency and contributes to our recommendation that this proceed. And I think what I'll do is I'll stop at this point and see if there are any questions or issues having to do with this topic. You know, I think I'll do a little briefing like this, and then I'll watch your subtle cues, your nonverbal cues as your heads hit your keyboards. So I'll stop and let you talk for a while, and then I'll go on to the next section. So any thoughts about response consistency from those of you who weren't on the working group, or you know that you want to get more info about? I'm getting nothing negative in that, but if there's anything that drives you crazy, by all means, shout it out. And by all means, if it really drives you crazy, please put in a public comment on this initial report. That's the whole goal of this session, is to prime the pump for public comments. All right, the next topic that we looked at was stability. And we, in many cases, sort of had to invent and refine the definitions of what we meant by that. And so in the case of this working group, what we meant is availability of WHOIS data in the case of a business or technical failure. And so you can think of all those scenarios. In a thin WHOIS model, there are, you know, basically what this comes down to is the number of copies of data that are available in the event of that kind of failure. And to summarize a fair number of words, what this boils down to is that in the case of thin, where the data is split between the registry and the registrar, there are two sources of data. And in the thick model, there are at least two, and could wind up being up to four, where this data is stored. So there are more copies of the data in more places, and we think that's an advantage. There are some downsides. And you know, this gets to one of the more subtle and certainly debated topics. Some of the participants in the work group note that having personal data stored in multiple sites makes that data more susceptible to attack and misuse. And again, we highlight that, but come to the conclusion that because there are fairly that particular issue we deal in the privacy and data protection section. But there are also is the risk of inconsistencies between these multiple copies of data. And that one we think is, you know, there are ways to mitigate that risk. And we point off to some examples of ways that can be done. So in some cases, the personal data and privacy issue showed up in several of the other places, and we consolidated that discussion in the privacy and data section privacy and data protection section of this report. And so again, our conclusion is that moving from thin to thick would improve stability. And thus, that's a good thing. The next thing that we talked about, I'll take a quick checkpoint. Anybody want to chime in on stability? Okay. The next section is about access to Whois data and whether this changes under the two models, whether one is more efficient and cost-effective or not. And where we wound up on this is that in a thin registry, the Whois data is only really available, the Whois data about the registrants of domains is only available at the registrar, whereas the domain name data is available in both places. In thick, both are in at this stage of the game, both are available from either place. And we found a study that pointed to the fact that in thick registries, data tended to be accessible a higher percentage of the time, whereas in thin, there was a reduction in that availability because of the lack of redundancy. The other thing that we found in the contractual compliance submission to our work was that only 94% of registrars were providing consistent access to Whois data in compliance with, you know, in the part of the RAA that compliance was looking at. And so, again, what we did is we took a look at that and concluded that, I guess there's some advantages here. So the working group likes the idea that the data is available in two places. And we like the fact that, we outlined a couple scenarios where having the data at the registry would be helpful, one being the registrar was in an outage, and the other is that sometimes a registrar will implement strong or overly defensive ways to prevent large-scale automated access to the data, and perhaps this would be an advantage in this environment. Again, as with every section, we have the possibility of some bad news. And some of those topics were it may be difficult. There's the problem of suppressing data if we change models in the future. And as with several other issues, we concluded that this one was not one that we should tackle. This is one that should be tackled in the broader context of thick Whois management across all the GTLDs rather than the subset that we were looking at. We got into some pretty inside baseball on data escrow. I'm going to skip that one. And we also talked about the fact that network connectivity just failed. So I'll watch the. How does it look in the? Oh, there it's back. Oh, good. We talked about data escrow. My screen just flashed, so I'm waiting for it to recover. sort of reading the report again and summarizing it in my head, and some of these are very nuanced things that I have to take a moment to read first. One of the issues that we ran into is that right now there are substantially more registrars than there are registries. There's a relatively small number of registries. In the future, with the new GTLD program, that number is going to become much closer to equal. And there may be some issues in terms of accessing WHOIS data across many registries that we don't see today. And again, we concluded that there are other processes at work that may address that. So I think I'm going to stop and take another breather sort of while I recover and see if there are any questions so far. Again, that's the trouble with this briefing, is we sort of have two scales. We have ultra summarized and we have super detailed. And the reason we don't have the middle layer is because, as you can see, this is a very nuanced report that was worked through very carefully by the working group, and trying to summarize it is tricky. So, the reason there isn't an easy to digest middle layer is because producing that would be extremely difficult. And I apologize for that, but that's just the way it is. So I'm going to move on to the privacy and data protection section. And I'm going to go through this one fairly slowly and pretty carefully, because clearly this was a topic that we spent a lot of time and energy on. We've got a lot of the folks in that subteam. I'm going to stumble through the summary. I'm counting on the subteam to straighten me out. I stumbled through it even worse in the Saturday session in the GNSO or the Sunday session. So pay attention to the words in the report, not the words of the hapless chair in this. But the fundamental question is whether a thick and a thin registry model present different risks with respect to data protection and privacy. And the subteam zeroed in on several subsets of that. One is, what's the impact on data at rest? What's the impact on information held in registry databases versus data in motion, records being transferred from registrars to registries in a thick model? We wanted to define risks to say what that included. And we talked about unauthorized disclosures and issues related to information disclosure in violation of local law and regulations. Two different kinds of things, but both clearly very important. These risks also include the possibility that information could be deleted or altered either accidentally or deliberately, which could be a more significant issue for those people who believe that WHOIS information is public and therefore cannot be disclosed, as you will, in an unauthorized manner. We had to simplify this discussion in this report for purposes of clarity, but the other thing is that a detailed risk analysis of this is really beyond the capacity and scope of this working group, given the complexity of the issues. And so, for example, we focused on the necessity for data to be transferred. We didn't discuss whether data may, in fact, move when a registrar in a thin environment has redundant systems. And we also explained that data at rest is stored information. So for our simplified model, simplified version in this report, includes data in use, which is a term that really wasn't useful for what we were doing, whereas data in motion is information that's being transferred. So those were our two kinds of data, at rest and in motion. So we started by describing the data protection and privacy in a thin model, the current model for those registries that we're interested in. And we said that when data is at rest, it's going to be protected to the extent that the registrar's security safeguards are in place. Somebody moved my cheese. Help me. There we go. And so data at rest is one. Data in motion is another of our dimensions. And in a thin model, the registrant data will not be transferred, so it's never in motion. And again, the third key issue, this is a sort of repetitive chunk of the report. The third piece of this is the data protection laws facet of this. WHOIS records must be made public under ICANN rules. At first glance, any applicable data protection laws will be the rules of the location of a registrar. However, it's possible that a registrant's location might be determined of where a registrant and a registrar are not in the same jurisdiction. You can see how nuanced this gets. And you can also see why I'm being pretty much the fellow that reads your report to you. Come on up to the table if you want to make a comment and hit one of the microphones. The regime that we do here is you say your name just so we can get it into the transcript and off you go.
Okay. Urs Eros from Internetics. I have a question considering the data protection laws. Under what circumstance has your group considered it to be determinative about the registrant, not the registrar?
Oh, you turned your mic off.
We couldn't really think about a situation where this could be possible. How did you come to the conclusion?
I'm going to throw the ball to smart people, and you know, stay there by the mic because Don may want to ask you questions on what you mean. I would ask that if I were him.
We didn't get into that level of detail. The purpose of this group, I think, was to identify the issues and where the potential issues were. Part of our conclusions were that these are issues that need to be examined by privacy experts, by specifically ICANN General Counsel, by attorneys for the different contracted parties. I'm trying not to duck the question, but I think that's fundamentally it. Our role really was to raise the issues and make sure they're addressed by the people competent to do it.
Okay, and the following question. Who will be, in the end, driving the decision on what data protection law we have to go on? Because this is really a topic that we have been thinking about a lot. We are a registrar at the moment, but we will be a registry, so we really have to focus on where can we or at what types of law do we have to look. And from our point of view, it can only be the registrar or the registry, because, first of all, you never know in which jurisdiction your registrant might be living at the moment. And secondly, I give the example of a bank. If I'm a German citizen and I go and make up a bank account in the U.S., it would always be U.S. law that the bank has to follow. They don't care where I come from and which data protection law might be mine as a German citizen because I open it up with a bank in the U.S. So could you think of a different way of going to this topic that really putting the focus on the registrant's position?
Now I will give you a supremely attorney answer. It depends. I don't know enough about the laws of every country in the world, and that's where we get into snags. I trust you know German law. I don't know that your answer is going to apply, say, with a registrant in the Philippines. And that's why this is going to need such a comprehensive look. And I think as more data protection regime, I mean, most people focus, for example, on the Article 29 Working Party. But as more and more countries around the world come up with data protection regimes, Chile is instituting some laws. There's the APEC regime, Asia Pacific. These questions are just going to get more convoluted over time.
Yeah, but wouldn't you also agree that me as a registrar or a registry, I cannot comply to every single data protection law, so I can only be forced to really, comply to the data protection law in my country where I operate, because I have to know that, I have to obey to that. But could you really force me to respect data protection law all around the world, which I can't even know about, or very hardly?
Well, I think that's going to get into business decisions in some cases. Some companies may be forced not to take registrants from certain countries. Helen, I don't want to hog this.
Yeah, as a company operating in a country, you are bound by the laws of that country, clearly. You are bound by the terms of the contracts that you sign, that you choose to sign. And your registrant is bound by the terms of the registration agreement, which reflect those laws that you are bound by. Any more than that, I don't think, is out of our ability to predict. So we're assuming that any registrar or registry follows their own laws. If ICANN rules are at odds with those, as they are on occasion, that's a business issue you need to resolve, and you need to put terms in your agreement that make sure that the registrant is bound by whatever, to fulfill whatever you have to fulfill. And I don't think we can go any farther than that.
This is Mikey. I'm going to regain control of my cue, just so I don't want to shut anybody off. But Amr typed a point into the chat that I wanted to inject. Amr says the question, and I believe he's referring to your question, makes sense, but it will require a legal expertise to answer it. I encourage the gentleman to submit a public comment on this. And this is precisely and exactly why we're here today, is to begin this conversation and then absolutely to encourage you to put that into a public comment, because that's our next phase, is to take this feedback from you all and work on it, try and figure something out. Now, I don't want to end this because, I sort of jumped in the middle of the conversation, but I did want to inject Amr's thing. Alan, did you have something to follow on there?
Okay. Yeah, a follow on to what you and Amr are saying. There has been a lot of discussion, I'm tempted to say an infinite amount of discussion, on privacy issues, and a lot of them focus around, I won't say theoretical, but I'll say problems that people envision but really cannot point to the specifics, just a feeling of unease in the pit of their stomach that something is wrong. So to the extent that you can, in your comment, cite specific cases where there may be something that's problematic, as opposed to saying you too feel a bit uneasy, to help us get down to the bottom line of, are we causing a problem or fixing a problem in what we're recommending?
Okay, this is Mikey again. Don, did you have anything to add? Volker, go ahead. Is this on the same thing or is this a new one?
This ties into this thing, Volker Greimann. Actually, this entire discussion ties into an issue that a lot of us have raised for some time now, and which is that ICANN should really try to get national data protection officials more involved in the ICANN process. I mean, we have the GAC. The GAC is doing a tremendous job, but they cannot represent all the interests. They represent some of the interests, but most of the GAC members I've talked to are not data protection officials or have detailed knowledge on that subject. Some of them have not even talked to their national data protection officials when asked about certain things and when giving statements about certain issues before the GAC. Therefore, it should be in the best interest of all parties within ICANN and of ICANN itself to get into a dialogue with the data protection officials of all the nations. And I am very pleased that the Article 29 Working Party has taken the first couple of steps and come to ICANN and said, this is our position, we are here, talk to us. And more data protection officials should do that, and ICANN should be very much more welcoming to these positions.
Thanks, Volker. Amy's next, unless you... Amy's been very patient, so let me... And remember our routine, you know, say your name into the... Blah, blah, blah. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Amy Mishawar. I'm with a data protection and data security lawyer with Ballard Spahr. While I do welcome this conversation, Thick Who is essentially contact information. There are companies, personally, my day-to-day business model is dealing with data security breaches and privacy compliance, global privacy compliance programs, for far more than simply contact information. There are large companies like Experian and large multinational retailers that have already dealt with these questions and that have already developed global compliance programs. So while this is an area of law that is subject to constant change, while this is a difficult database issue to implement, and I do appreciate those concerns, this is an area where compliance with laws is possible. And this is an area where we should not be talking about it in the abstract. We should be dealing with this in a practical fashion. I'm an engineer as well as a lawyer. I understand that the way that we solve this problem is going back to the basics, doing the data mapping. What do we have? Contact information. Where do we expect it? In what countries? Doing the research, and then appropriating the individual databases associated with each country's information in accordance with local law.
I got lots of bites on that one, so let me do my advertisement for a public comment, because, you know, there's no way that we can cover this with the rigor that we need to in this. So, great comment. Please give us, you know, a bit more in the public comment cycle, and now I'll sort of run in the direction my eye traveled from Don to the fellow next to him to Volker. So, Don, you first, go ahead.
Yeah, Urs again. I absolutely agree with my two colleagues, and we've already also made up our mind. And the only point I might disagree a little with Volker is that I don't think it's on ICANN to invite the data protection responsibles of every country. It should be the registrars and the registries doing so. So what we decided, at least for the German based registrars and registries, we will all get together, talk to our data protection responsibles in Germany, try to get a letter from them really saying this is what we are allowed to do in the German jurisdiction, and we need exceptions in all our contracts for the German-based registrars and registries so we can fulfill this data law. So it should be the registrars and registries going proactively to ICANN and saying, okay, this is what we are allowed to do. ICANN cannot go to every 250 or 280 countries and try to get to this data protection law. It should be really us doing that, I guess.
Thanks. Don, you're nodding over to Volker, or do you want to go next?
No, go ahead if you want to respond. Right.
It should be a Volker Greimann speaking. It should be a two-way process. Of course, it's most incumbent on the registrars and registries to find out what their country's laws are and act upon them. But ICANN should be welcoming when such comments are forthcoming, and they should reach out to at least a few of the data protection officials when certain issues are raised. I think that's very important. Many registries, the second point, many registries can probably learn a lot about what their data protection laws in their countries are by looking at their ccTLDs. How the ccTLDs have been handling it for years is probably a very good indication of how they should set up their who is output as well to be in compliance with their local law.
Microphone off. There you go. Done.
Okay. I want to respond to a comment a couple minutes ago. And by laying out, I was the chair of this privacy subteam. I've taught privacy and enterprise security practices at the University of Michigan and was in law enforcement in both privacy and data protection, meaning enforcing security breach laws. The laws concerning what data may be gathered, privacy, and how data must be protected once it's gathered, are two very different areas. And that's one of the reasons that I think our group is called Data Protection and Privacy. They're not the same thing. Part of our mandate was to look, for example, if a thin registry winds up transferring data, it's going to be in a at a level in the registrar business that's unprecedented. And a big part of that is going to have to be security measures, making sure that data is safe in transfer. But that's a different question from what we addressed in the data protection arena as to whether registrars or registries should be gathering this data in the first place. Should registrants be forced to provide it? So I just want to make sure that we focus on the difference in two areas of law.
Thanks, Don. I have Steve in the queue and then you. Anybody else that I have missed? Checking the chat. No, it looks like you're up, Steve.
Thank you. This is Steve Metallitz, a member of the working group. This is a fascinating conversation, and I agree with Mikey that it's great to get public comments on these issues. But I have to say that if the public comments are on some of the topics that we've just spent a few minutes talking about, I'm not sure what the working group is going to do with them. Our focus really is on whether thick who is should be required. These questions about which is the applicable law, and and what does a particular law require a registrar operating in that jurisdiction to do? They exist now, and they will exist even if there was a move to thick who is for all registries. So I hope when people make their comments, they can try to hone in on how a transition to universal thick who is in the GTLD world, if you want to put it that way, would affect these questions, pro or con. Those would be the comments that would be most useful, because the working group's job will be to take these comments and see if they change what the recommendation is and the rationale, and if so, how. Thank you.
This is Mikey. I just want to amplify what Steve said. You know, the issue of data protection across all thick who is way outside of our remit, and to the extent that we can narrow that focus, that would be very helpful. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Mark Perkel. I'm from the United States, and in the United States there's two sets of laws. There's public law, which has the Fourth Amendment and has strong privacy protection, and then you have secret law. And in secret law with secret courts, you have no privacy protection whatsoever, and the government gathers up every piece of information it can possibly get, which I would assume would include the WHOIS database. And when you come from a country like the United States that has two sets of laws, how do we reconcile that with the WHOIS?
This is another one where your hapless chair is going to say, great comment, please give us a public comment on that. There's no way I'm going to take a swing at answering that one. If anybody smarter than me wants to, he looks beseechingly down the line, that would be great. But otherwise, please send a longer comment. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, I may be partly confused by the comment, but the data that is
in Thick Who is already public, so it's not different from what is already publicly available. So I'm not really even sure if I understand your...
I was wondering about the private data, you know, the stuff that is not in Thick Who is.
That's not in this system. So, for example, customer billing information, location information, any of that kind of thing does not appear in the Whois database. This is a publicly accessible database.
Where's the private data stored then?
At wherever it exists, generally at the registrars. And it's not put into this system. This system is only the public Whois.
Oh, I see. So what you're saying is that the registrars takes part of the data that's public and sends it to the Thick Whois database.
Right.
So okay. Well,
it's already public.
In that case, my different comment is that I would like to make is I would like to see more fields in the Thick Whois database. Specifically, I'm in the spam filtering business, and if there were an email contact for a field for reporting problems, so that if I see spam coming from a domain, or somebody who's in charge of IPs for that domain, that I can contact them and say, hey, you have a problem, and to alert them on how to shut that down. That would be extremely useful, especially if I could read that at high speed through, not through a regular Whois call that would burden the system, but through like some type of a DNS type call where I could look up, you know, an email address through DNS. That would be So that the Thick Whois is presentable through a high-speed public interface.
Those are great ideas, but they're way outside the remit of what we're doing.
May I suggest you put these comments into the expert working group, get involved in the WIRDS process that's looking at the protocol in IETF. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't send that public comment in here. Send it into the expert working group. Their comments are due August 12th, and they are looking at what should be the data elements for the successor protocol to Whois in the future. And if you have a suggestion on a data element that's not there now and should be, that they're the ones to direct it to. And you should explain how you would use it, because they're focusing on how particular data is used for various different purposes.
So one of the really tricky things about this particular study is that it's really hard to describe the tiny little thing that we're actually working on. And so by no means do I want you to leave with the impression that that was a bad idea or a stupid question. It's mostly my fault for not doing a really good job of describing the incredibly narrow bounds of what we've been working on. I agree that the expert working group is probably the right target for that, and I apologize if we kind of came down on you on that, but it is quite a bit outside the scope of what we're working on.
I understand some of this is it's hard to figure out who's doing what and what's the scope, and I came in late, but I have a big mouth, and I have to talk, you know, when I think of something.
We love people with big mouths, and we hope you stay. Is there anybody else that wants to chime in on this? Rick, go ahead.
I'm not going to chime in on the data piece at all. I want to understand from the report recommendation, yes, we'll go up for public comment. It's a lot of shifting sand right now. So this report ultimately will recommend sort of the adoption of a Thick Whois. Where do you see that fitting into the delegation of the GTLDs and into the conversation around potentially a centralized Whois repository? Is your working group interacting with the GTL deployment schedule? Is it interacting with that piece of work?
This is Mikey again. Let me give you sort of the, and I'm making this up, and it's not in the report, so if I make up something stupid, I'll count on smart people to straighten me out. But when the expert working group was announced, we were already underway, and I happened to be in a meeting with Steve Crocker and said, should we wait? Should we go? How do we fit? And Steve said, well, the expert working group stuff is further out into the future. so I wouldn't wait for them, was his first comment. As we talked more, I can't remember who came up with this idea. One of us did. One of the I think, undocumented advantages of getting everybody onto the same model is that if there's a transition to a new model, everybody would be coming from the same place rather than having thin registries going to the new destination and thick registries going to the new destination. They would all be thick going to the new destination. This presumes that the destination's some years out. Predicting the number of years is an over-under at best. And then, in terms of the new GTLD rollout, all of the new GTLDs are specified as being thick in the applicant guidebook. So there are essentially these three thin registries that are sort of a legacy that we're trying to align with the architecture of everything else. And so the timing of this one is sort of independent of the GTLD rollout, because it's the new GTLDs are all thick already. Does that get to where you were headed, or did I miss it?
It does, thank you. So one small follow-on question then is, so this report does get into specifications. Is that consistent with what is being asked for of the GTLDs from a thick WHOIS?
Yeah, for the most part, we were pointing at applicant guidebook sections when we did that.
So in a sense, adoption of your recommendation will dovetail completely into the GTLD program.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, if anybody finds something that does not dovetail, we sure want to hear about that.
Okay, thanks.
Don.
Just to clarify the scope, this project was to look at whether registries, and don't anybody run screaming, please, registries in any new round of new GTLD applications would also be thick, as in the current new round, and whether the existing thin would move to thick. It doesn't have anything to do with the current applicant guidebook and new round of GTLDs.
Better explanation than mine. Typical. Anything else on this topic? We've actually covered quite a wide range of things. We just triggered it with this topic, which is sort of not surprising. Go ahead, Don.
When we were drafting the privacy subteam report, I subtitled it, and the draft went a long way pulled it out. It was the report of the privacy and data protection underneath, a.k.a. the rat's nest.
Yeah.
And what, took about the fifth draft before that disappeared?
Yeah. I decided that couldn't go into the initial report, but it certainly lived a long life before it got removed. Going once, going twice, let me just check the chat. Looks like we're square and the work. Okay, I'm going to chug along to the next piece, which is now going to be repetitive. Remember, we had data at rest, data in motion, and the laws. This is the description of the situation in a thick environment. So this is the one where they're all together. And so data at rest hinges pretty much entirely on the extent that the security safeguards are in place in registrar or registry systems, you know, because we now have two places where that resides. Data in motion, now there is transfer. In the thin model, there was not transfer, and so the security issue here is a bit different. And here what we're saying is that this brings in the need for additional safeguards. For the data that remains with a registrar. And these safeguards are similar to those that must be in place for data at rest, but they have the added complexity of the interception dimension, protecting against interception, and possibly reinserting or corrupting the data while it's in transit. And then in the data protection laws section, who is records, again, you know, this to a certain extent mirrors the other section. The records must be made public. This is public data. Under ICANN rules, thick WHOIS models present additional challenges with respect to possible data protection conflicts because of the transport from point A to point B. And then we pose a question. Do the rules governing registrars apply because registrant contracts are signed in their countries, or does a registry's regime govern because the registry publishes the data? How relevant is the location of the registrant? So that's exactly back to the point you were raising. And so public comments on this would be really helpful. But again, to the narrow scope, you know, not to the issue of all thick WHOIS, but this transition from thin to thick. That's the one we're really zeroing in on. Now I'm seeing by people fleeing the room. I wonder if I bored people to the point where... Because we're getting pretty close to only members of the working group left. So I just want to take a process checkpoint. Is this torture? Shall I change the way we're doing this? Or is this the right way to do it?
No.
Is it getting close to the end? Okay. Well, maybe. I think maybe, you know, I think that the discussion we had around data protection and privacy is certainly the most rigorous, and it's certainly the one that we're hunting for comments on. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just scream through the rest. I think the one other topic that's really tasty, I'm going to go out of the data protection chunk for now, and I'm going to scream ahead through some that are fairly non-controversial. And again, you can tell how much scrolling I did. There's quite a lot of text that we did not cover today. So for those of you who are new to this report, please take a look at that. I'm going to skip through cost implications. Basically, the cost team said, meh, it's a wash. I can do that because I was the chair of that subteam. I'm going to skip the synchronization and migration one for the same reason. I want to get to the authoritativeness one. And the reason I want to highlight this is because we worked pretty hard on this one. And in fact, Pat Kane from VeriSign ran into me last night, Steve, in the bar. And I encouraged him, A, to read this section of the report very carefully because he's operating under some misimpressions. And I pointed him at you as the chair of this section as a resource in case he had questions. And I also really strongly encouraged public comment on that. And I think because he's really the only substantial thin registry, it's really important that we hear from VeriSign on this. Is Keith in the room? I thought I saw him around. I guess not. So this is mostly inside baseball for the working group, is that I think we've done a pretty good job, and I think that this section addresses the concerns that Pat Kane, who's the he's the CEO of the registry division of VeriSign or something like that, had. But just a heads up on that one. And if you see him, you might buttonhole him and just work him through some of this stuff. I'm not going to drag everybody through this one, but I will point it out to you that this is another tasty section of the report. And with that, I might wrap it up. We're about 10 minutes from the top of the hour. I think we've sort of accomplished our mission, but I do want to leave people the chance to, you know, if there's something on your mind that we haven't covered, you know, this is all about hearing from you, not me. That's for sure. Go ahead.
Yes, it's more of a general comment. Since the expert working group report went out, I can't stop thinking of a bigger picture, and I'm struggling with the idea of why is it that we have to go through this whole process if within the near future we will have like a new model? So is it worth doing it? You know,
that's essentially the question I asked Steve Crocker, You want to chime in? Go ahead. Let me go a little bit off the ranch here and tell you the comment that I made in response to listening to the report of that working group. I think that they've done the easy stuff. I don't think they've done the hard stuff. I think that it's very unlikely that they've actually moved the needle much on these very difficult issues. And so at the end of the comment, I said, you know, if you leave it in this state, I'm not going to join that working group because it's going to be the same tragedy that we've been through before. So I'm strongly encouraging them to dig in hard on this stuff and at the same time, sort of going back to Steve Crocker's point, which is don't wait for them. It's worth it to bring these things in alignment in advance. Because remember, the reason we're doing this is not to be forgotten. The reason we're doing this is because until we get to this environment, a key recommendation of IRTPB and a key recommendation of IRTPC cannot be implemented. And so there are other things that are driving this bus, and it's very much worth it in terms of the security and stability of the domain transfer process. So there's big benefit there.
Sorry, Marie-Laure Lemineur, NPOC for the record. Actually, we had an NPOC session and we met the expert working group, and I sort of insisted and repeated your comments about that they didn't get to a certain level, and I supported your comments. And they pretty much agreed. Well, at least they nodded, and they said yes. And I specifically said Mikey's comments.
Oh, that Mikey, he hates everything. Steve, you got anything, or shall we wrap it up? Okay, I think we'll call. Oh, go ahead, Volker.
Yeah, we'll just like to support Mikey. What we have, and I think this working group has worked very hard in the direction that we can say that we are all in support of ThickWhois, and there still may remain some work to be done, but if this working group comes out with the result that ThickWhois is a reality, then we have achieved something. The expert working group has produced something which is still very much contentious in some areas, until still needs a lot of definition in other areas. So I still think that we'll see a couple of years go by before anything the expert working group has recommended will become reality, if ever.
I would just like to add the support of the current working group, that if the expert working group work is not far enough along for you to join the working group, we will stand in solidarity and not join the working group either.
Oh, dear. I'm going to be in big trouble. Well, I won't go into a lot of detail on that, but I think they've got some work to do, at least to chart a course. You know, there are the tips of icebergs that came out in a lot of the comments yesterday. We need to at least have a sense of how we navigate that. And I think one of the things that's sort of interesting and heartening is this conversation that's springing out of the Article 29 working group and the notion that Volker put forward that we, you know, be more welcoming, ta-da-da-da. I think there is a path in there, but that needs a lot of fleshing out before I would want to join that death march. I do have to get Amr's comment. Amr said, now wait a minute. Dang, now this is Amr in the chat. Not all of us support ThickWhois, and so in fairness to our honored co-conspirator, I just wanted to get that on the record. And I think with that, it's the top of the hour, effectively. We'll give the next group a couple of minutes to settle in. We'll call it a day, and I appreciate everybody who was here, and on we go. Thanks, gang.